Jam Fam, season 6, amazing. And today's episode is just as amazing. Joe, what did you think?
Hello. Filled my cup up like, whoa, that was so good. So good. I just love the like real, you know, I like a good story. And Shay was such a good storyteller. And she had like 1,000 more, which I was like, I have to go to New York City and we need to sit down and I just want to like get a cup of coffee and have her just tell more stories because it was, I just love that stuff. There's just nothing beats just good, real stories in our industry.
Well, I also love the history of her teaching and the roots of it for her. And it came from somebody we've lost in the dance world, but how she's continuing that legacy with Dr. Henry Letang, a name that we don't hear much anymore in the tap world, but was really a creator for so many. And so many of the tap shows that are out there have been influenced or choreographed by him. So I loved hearing all of that.
Yeah, I mean, and I know we're all eager to have the students that think about that or like ask those questions or like, where did that step come from? Or, you know, or who influenced this? And I think I love that we have the opportunity to do that on this podcast. We love to ask the people like Shay. We talk about other previous podcast guests like Jermaine Goodson and Al Blackstone and many others that Tommy Scrivens. And we just love having those conversations and asking these instructors. I mean, she's at Steps Broadway Dance Center. She's choreographing for so much stuff and has done so much. She's been working with great individuals like Dr. Henry Letang since she was young, and she tells that story. And having this platform that I share with you, Michelle, is so fun to just learn that. So listeners, I know you're going to enjoy this podcast episode, and please give us feedback of what you want to hear more of and what you've learned from these shows. It just helps keep that conversation going and it keeps wonderful legacies alive. So with that, Michelle.
We hope you enjoy our episode with Shay Sullivan.
You are now tuned in to
Joe and Michelle's Dance Podcast.
Get on down.
Michelle Tolson with the cutest co-host in Pittsburgh.
That's me, Joe. Last name Nick, first name Joe. Last name Nickel. I was prepared this time. For the record, if you're new listening to this podcast, Michelle sometimes pauses and lets me finish the intro saying my own name. And sometimes she says it. So that's why I hesitate, because I have no clue.
And it's been 6 seasons and we still
have it. I try to work off the way you do eye contact, and I still don't have it. You trick me every time. So I feel like a million bucks kicking this thing off. Hi, Michelle. Well,
hi. We are back to norm. I'm back from Maine, sitting in the Brooklyn Casa with the cat. She's very excited to be back on the desk doing a Zoom with me.
I'm excited to be recording today. It's been a few weeks since we recorded, you and I.
Yeah, I don't like that. But I like who we're jumping back in with.
Yeah.
I think we should just dive in.
What's so fun is you tell me, you know, this is your guest today, and I'm excited because I'll be able to hopefully call this person a friend right after this. And I love meeting your network because, A, your network's crazy. But I love looking into, you know me, I do a little bit of homework when we have a guest on. And even when it's my own guest and a friend of mine, I still do some preparation. And I got so excited when I was preparing a few questions and learning more about our guests. And I can't wait to learn more. I didn't text you, but I was going to text you, which is usually what happens. I'm usually like, Michelle, I'm really excited today. Though I didn't text you, I was really excited when I was preparing, I should say. Should we get to it?
Well, you actually did.
Did I text you? I might have.
You called me yesterday to tell me you had some questions for me. Joe is the one that is always prepared. I'm sure you did really well in school.
No, I did okay. I did okay. You know, I did the subjects I wanted. You know, it's like, I like that subject. I'm going to be into it. The subjects I didn't, right, well, that's why I looked the other way.
So well on the podcast.
Yeah.
That's why you do so well on the podcast. So here we go.
Take it away.
Shay Sullivan is an award-winning director and choreographer who has worked in film, television, and theater. The New York Times describes her choreography as adds high gloss and creating infectious joy. Recently, Shay was nominated for a Cheetah Rivera Award for her choreography of the off-Broadway show Neurosis. For 20 years, Shea was the protege of Tony Award-winning choreographer Dr. Henry Letang. She assisted Mr. Letang on many projects and taught with him until his passing in April 2007. She was the assistant choreographer to Mr. Letang for the Showtime movie Bojangles, starring the late, great Gregory Hines. Shea credits her understanding of the work of a choreographer to the unique relationship she had with Mr. Letang. I'm going to link her bio in our show notes because the amount of shows that she has is crazy. And there's the Cheetah Rivera Award nomination. There is an Off-Broadway Alliance Award. There is a Carbonell Award. They're all award. Burke Theater Critic Award nomination. There were so many things. And we are so excited to, tonight to speak with Shea Sullivan.
What's up, Shea? Ooh.
Hey, thank you. Wow. I mean, yes.
I mean, okay.
Did I do those things? I think so.
You did all those things and so many more because your bio is short. You wrote it short. It's much longer. I know that.
I know, but isn't it? I mean, I've asked a few guests this, but is it? How often do you hear someone kind of read off your, you know, career accomplishments?
Like never.
Isn't that weird? Is it weird? I don't know.
It's a little weird, but you said the name Dr. Henry Letang, and that's all I kind of, you know, and Gregory Hines. So with just those two names, I'm just smiling from ear to ear. So it's all, thank you for that.
Yes. Well, so did I, but let us go back.
Yes.
Let us go back a little bit. So I have been a fan of yours for years and we have yet to meet in person, but I knew you from the pageant world and I've seen your choreography on stage at Miss America. So kudos to you. I love the diversity you give your students on stage. I've seen you do tap. I've seen you do probably roller skating. I've seen you do baton. You might have baked a cake. Not one of your dancers looks alike when I see them on stage. So that alone is a talent. You're a great choreographer, but I love that you make each girl feel special when they're up there. So tell me how you got involved in choreographing for the pageant world.
So I love how you're like bake a cake, because I was going to say, I mean, there was a sock puppet moment.
See?
Shut up.
I love that. Exactly.
Well, anything that comes on stage that you're just like, wasn't expecting that and it was done well, winner.
Tens across the board.
So I grew up around the pageant world. I went to a school in Oklahoma City University, and that school had a very big pageant program. As a freshman, my mother was very into pageants, and so as a freshman, she really, you know, entertained that I should do it. She twisted my arm a little bit that I should enter the pageant, and I thought, well, it's fun. I loved the talent portion. I got to work with my mentor Henry that we just talked about, and we will talk about later, but on this talent portion. So I thought, well, you know what, this sounds fun. So as a freshman, I entered Miss OCU and won, which is like not really heard of at the time because it's like one of the most competitive pageants, local pageants. So here I was just like, you know, 18, win Miss OCU and go on to Miss Oklahoma. I was and sort of fell in love with it. I fell in love with the community. I fell in love with the sponsors and the directors, and was top 10 that first year. And then the next year I went back and ended up being first runner up to Miss Oklahoma, which was a huge honor. And a few years down the road after that, I decided not to continue competing anymore. And one of the things that I was known for in the pageant community was my talent. I was a tap dancer. I, at one point did a tap number where I told jokes to the audience while I did an acapella tap dance that I made up as I went along, and, just sort of like super random, but fun. And the Miss Oklahoma pageant actually asked me if I would choreograph for the Miss Oklahoma Julie Payne, actually, and that was in 1997. Aging myself, but that's okay. Going to Miss America in 1998, I choreographed Julie's talent for Miss America, and she won talent at Miss America. And it was actually as I was just getting my legs as a choreographer, I was maybe 21. Ish. I fell in love with being a choreographer. I fell in love with teaching. And so it sort of was the way, it was my entree into that. And I've been doing it ever since.
I would like to backtrack on this story.
Yeah.
Each state is very different. Oklahoma is a competitive state when it comes to Miss America. Do you remember how many contestants there were?
Probably somewhere just shy of 50.
Right. So it's the same amount as Miss America, number one. And you said your second year you came in first runner up, and the woman that became Miss Oklahoma that year became Miss America. So we're talking competitive. I know you just did it and you're like, yeah, that's always my life. But I know how huge that is. And I want our audience to understand how huge that is, because for the year I went to Miss America, that Miss Oklahoma that became Miss America crowned my year. Hmm. So I got to see her perform in a powerhouse.
Yeah. I mean, I look back on those days and I'm, like I said, I was very fortunate to be in the position I was in. I just sort of loved it. I mean, I was 18, 19. I was like, I don't know what this is, but you know, I had grown up in dance competitions. So I sort of understood the dance element. I was junior Miss Dance of Florida and Miss Dance of Florida. And I had, you know, so I sort of understood what that, you know, the talent aspect of it was, but, yeah. So thank you. I mean, it was awesome.
Well, I have a question. I mean, we're going to get to all the choreography you've done, which we don't have the time of this podcast to talk about all of it, but choreographing for a system like a pageant like Miss America, mm-hmm. did you have a different approach, or do you have a different approach with that? And I know it's with one contestant than you do for your other projects. Like, how do you, you know, obviously you're working with whatever talent that is, you know, how do you, and how long are the numbers? Aren't they, you know, you only have a
90 seconds.
Something like that,
so
right?
So it's 90 seconds. When I first started choreographing, I think it was still at the two-minute mark. And then it was like, you know, then it was sort of became the 90-second mark. I mean, I think when I first started, it's so interesting to think about when I first started choreographing for, you know, in the pageant world, because that's when I actually really started choreographing for theater. And it was, I was getting my sea legs. I mean, I was still very much of an age of someone and that wanted to be on Broadway and wanted to perform and wanted to be on the other side. And when I started with the choreography for the pageants and I started choreographing for theater, I really realized, and teaching, this all sort of came at the same time as I started teaching at Broadway Dance Center and Steps on Broadway in New York, is like, I sort of realized that being a choreographer and being a teacher was really where my passion was. And I think for me, the same way I approach working all these years later in the pageant community, in the same way that I approach every project, is very individualized. It's very much about being in the room for me. It's very much about walking into the room, reading the room, being in the space of the person or the entire company present to me, and sort of being able to adapt to what's in front of me and create in the moment.
Can I answer that? Yeah. Now that you talked about a little bit of the process, you know, again, you've worked on so many shows and musicals. I love learning about this. I'm going to ask a lot of questions about it. Is there a part of the process that is like your favorite? I mean, is it the pre-pro? Is it casting? Is it like the audition room? Is it the workshopping stuff? Is it collaborating with the other departments? And I'm sure you have an answer like, I like all of it. But like, is there a part of that process that is your favorite or the most, I hate to use the word important, but you know, the part of the process that you feel like it's so important to get this right before moving forward? Or is there a part that you're just like, I can let loose, or this, if this doesn't work, the rest of it will be difficult?
I think that's it. Cause I was going to say like, it's all of it. I love it all. But yeah. I think it's the trusting in myself. That's the most important thing. Like over the years have just gained trust in myself to know. And because sometimes I'll like wake up in the morning and be like on the, you know, first day of school, like, right, you know, you're going to go to the first day of this rehearsal, or you're going to rehearsal or for whatever it is, a show or something. And I'm like, am I going to do this? And then it's just reminding myself that yes, that I have worked all of these years in rapid fire ways and have taught more classes than I mean, in the zillions at this point, and just know that I'm going to trust, I have to trust myself and know that as soon as I walk through those doors, it's just going to kick in and I'm just going to be in that space of something that I love. I love creating more than anything. So I think it's sort of like the excitement that I get sometimes of it being, it's never like, ugh, it's another day of this. It's always like, I'm just like so excited to like walk into the next room.
Yeah.
I love that. I know Joe does a lot of choreography competition wise, but he's also been studying a lot more in the Pittsburgh area. So I love that question for you, Joe.
Well, you just made me feel good. I was just reflecting about a year ago, I was setting Pippin this time of year. I just was like looking like 1 year today for a local university. And I had that same feeling, Shay. I had that like, can I do, like, I knew I could do this. Of course I could. I've choreographed a ton of musicals, but it was like, it's a big show. And I was like, all right, here we go. It's that they go through that. And it is, I think, first trusting yourself. And like you said, how many times we've all walked into a room, either teaching a class at times or a rehearsal process or an audition. And there is that good nervous, that good excitement, that feeling that you kind of just, you know, describe that you brought back in like an instance. And then when it's the end of the night, you're like, that was so good. Like, it was like, of course yeah. It was good because I've been doing this for a while. And there is, I think you're right. It is trusting yourself right out the gate. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Well, I would like to backtrack again to my starstruck moment, Dr. Henry Letang.
Right.
I would love to know about this friendship, education, how this all began. I'm just so fortunate. You were so fortunate.
I will tell you that at the end of the day, and something I say daily, is that I am the most fortunate ever. And I will start with how we met and our relationship together. But until I have a life partner now. Her name is Katie. We've been together for a zillion, 15 years at this point. And until Katie, Henry was, I mean, the greatest love and joy of my life. And like to be able to have, just to even to be able to be here and to think about the fact that I had these two great loves is something that I don't take for granted ever. So I was 12 years old. I was in New York City here where I live now, but I was here from Florida. I was in a dance competition, something like, I don't know, Miss Dance or Miss DEA or something, like unclear right now at the moment what it was. I had been the year before in Vegas and had like won the title and was coming back to defend my title. My mother brought me to New York. We were on the plane. We were reading a magazine, a dance magazine. She was reading dance magazine. I was 12. I was probably being dragged.
I was like, look at you.
Like, I don't know. No.
Flipping pages.
Eating my peanuts and like, just being a little brat. And there was an article in Dance Magazine about Henry Letang and how Henry had created, not only it was his show Black and Blue currently running on Broadway, he had just wrapped the movie Tap with Gregory Hines and every other Tap legend
Everyone.
On the planet. But also it mentioned in the article, Savion, who was at the time the same age as, he was like 13, I was 12, we were the same age. So she was reading this article and trying to talk to me about it. Of course, I was just like, you know, who cares? I was 12 and I was brat. So anyway, mm-hmm. We get to New York, I do the dance competition. The floor is super slippery. So one of the other parents said, if you put duct tape on her tap shoes, that'll help her not slip. So my mother, Mary, ran out and bought painter's tape. Painter's tape and duct tape are not the same thing. So right. I go out to do my William Tell Overture tap, award-winning tap dance with a bunch of spins and fall on my butt the entire time. Like flat, 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 boom. Flat, 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 boom. Spin, 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 boom. Oof. So I walk off the stage, take my tap shoes, toss them in the trash, boop, and say like, I'm never doing this again. You know, dramatic. And my mother was like, okay, she thought fast. The Mama Rose of it all. She's like, okay, if if I get you a tap lesson with the man I was reading about on the plane, would you consider? And he taught Gregory Hines and Savion. You think Savion's cute? What about this? And I was like, okay, all right. So she calls up, gets Henry's wife, Ellie, on the phone. Ellie answers the phone in the studio and says, if you get here in like the next 20 minutes, I'll let you have a half an hour lesson. So we literally fly to, we're at the Waldorf Astoria. We fly to 109 West 27th between 6th and 7th Avenue and go up the elevator to the sixth floor. I mean, this is what it's like ingrained in my brain. The elevator doors open and I literally walk into my Oz. Like I literally walked into this space that was the walls of the most Gregory Hines, Sammy Davis Jr., Ann Miller, just like the walls covered, Gene Kelly, just like the walls covered with all of these, Sam Anseps, all these great, Diane Walker, I mean, just all of these great legends. And this woman is like, you know, basically looking at my mother and I, who, you know, we're very different, looking from. We were just from Miami. We were doing our best. And she looks at us and it was like, and basically says, all right, the kid goes down the hall. You stay with me. And she gets a half an hour.
The kid. So I love it.
The kid goes down the hall. So I like disappear down the hall and walk into this room where sits Henry Letang. It was nothing like I had ever seen in my life. I had my studio that I grew up in, Miss Mary's studio in Miami. And she got me to the point to be able to walk in that door at Henry Letang and keep walking. But, the studio was like grimy and dirty and smoky. He was smoking.
I was like, can you smell the
dirt
room
on
now?
The floor? Yeah. And then like the hands on the mirrors and like, you know, nothing like Miss Mary's that was like pristine and perfect in Miami. And Henry Letang takes a look at me and says, all right, put your shoes on. And I pull my shoes out of my bag and they're heels. And he was like, okay, good. That's a good first step. And I spent 5 hours with him that day. So what? My half an hour lesson turned into five. Yeah.
Okay, let me pause you for a second because I was just having a conversation with somebody about the appreciation of time, right? I mean, it's all we got. It's literally all we have at the end of the day. And that is just an amazing story. And I know it's not over yet of just, you got 5 hours. Okay. Like what? Like that's and acknowledging that appreciation when you heard what it'd be like a half an hour, right? Which would have been great.
Yeah. We just clicked in a way that surprised both of us. I think, I mean, I was 12, he was 72 and he didn't really work with kids. He had discovered the Hines brothers at 5 and 7, or maybe it was 3 and 5 at that point, but 3 and 5 or 5 and 7. But it just was the magic of the time and just sort of our relationship that started there and stayed until he passed almost at 92. So another 20 years, but yeah, so I said a very long setup to that, but that is how I met Dr. Henry.
No, I live for these stories. I didn't know we were getting this, Michelle. Gosh, I expected it to be good. I love a good story. Wait, so, I mean, on the flip side of that, you're appreciating the time, obviously, that you had. Two questions. One statement, I guess, is he also, it's a reminder that now all of us as dance educators that we always preach, like, if you're coachable, I'll work all day with you. And like, you were coachable. Yeah. There was something where he, like you said, didn't work with, you know, his legacy wasn't working with 12-year-olds necessarily. His legacy was so much bigger than that. But it showed he has a legacy because of those moments. You know what I mean? Of like knowing this person wants to work and this is what I love and I'll keep doing it. I love that. My question is, did your mom go shopping? What the hell did your mom do for 5 hours?
So legend has it that she she asked when I wasn't coming out and I wasn't coming out, you know, she said to Ellie, his wife, like, is this going to be a while longer? Like, because I think whatever they had quoted her for the half an hour is probably already like kind of, you know, just sort of like, and also like, where did my 12-year-old go down a hallway, you know?
Right.
And she called my father and my father was like, all right, you know, okay, Mary, I mean, this is not, you know, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity and whatever it is, we'll just figure it out later. I mean, make sure she's safe, but like, you know, like, and she stayed out in the lobby with Ellie, his wife, and, you know, the rest is history. It's funny, it's just not funny, but it's great to be able to talk about this too now, because I'm actually in the process of developing a show about he and I, called Henry and Me. And we've done some, good development. We're continuing to develop and, it should be hopefully a show that will arrive. We'll see. Probably off Broadway in the next year or two. So
we'll be crying in the front row.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. I love that. So what parts of Henry and then your relationship do you carry on now in what you do? Like, is there something that...
Joe Nichol, you are reading my mind because that's where I was going next. I
There is not one day or one time in the studio that I do not speak Henry's name. His lessons and his teaching and the way that he influenced me as an artist and as a human being is something that I take with me on the daily. And one of the reasons that I actually want to do this show that I was just talking about before, Henry and Me, is that I have noticed over the years, you know, Henry did shows like Black and Blue, Sophisticated Ladies, Cotton Club, the movie, Ubi, the movie Tap, the movie Bojangles, which I actually did with him in Canada and spent 4 months on set with Gregory Hines. Those shows, even though those shows, some Sophisticated Ladies is done every now and then, but those shows aren't being brought back into the forefront anymore. And the more times the show 42nd Street is done, which was say sort of the same era, and the more times a show like 42nd Street, and I love that 42nd Street is being done, don't get me wrong, I think it's fantastic, but we're bringing back Gower Champion's name. We have Dancing with Fosse. Fosse's name is being back up front. Jerome Robbins' name is being back up front. Where's Henry's name? This was a man who literally changed the face of tap dance in theater and in film. And for me, I could say his name every time I step into the studio, every time I teach a class, every time I'm, you know, in a room choreographing. Every show has a Letang step or 12 in it that I always say to the kids. In the score is written Letang, but his name is not being brought back enough. And I think that's why I want to do this legacy piece for him and bring his name back. And through my lens, you know, this is the way I could do it. Because by the time I met him, he had already done all of those Broadway shows. So right. I met him at a point where he was just wrapped Tap. And the next movie and show he did was Bojangles, which I did with him. But I am now able to bring his name back into the conversation in a way that I can through my lens. So, which is very important to me.
I think it's really interesting. And I'd love to know your thought on this. Mm-hmm. As a teacher in higher education, I have the option of choosing music and choosing choreography to expose my students to. Mm-hmm. I find that my students don't know any shows that are Black-centric.
Right.
Do you think that is problematic? Like Jelly's Last Jam.
It's enormously problematic. Yes, it is. It is. And, you know, that, yes, thank you, Michelle, for that, because it is. And it's something that as a white woman, you know, I'm very aware that I was a 12-year-old little, you know, white kid that met this fantastic Black man at 72. And, you know, the conversations, and, you know, I often think about now when I'm working on this project, you know, about those moments of like the teachings, but it wasn't a lot of, we didn't have a lot of conversations about race, Henry and I. And I, you know, and he, when he passed away in 2007, I mean, I wish that I could have this conversation with him right now and talk about the fact that like these shows are not being brought, you know, back and forth, and, you know, and I love, Gregory was one of my dearest friends, Gregory Hines. And, you know, just to think about like there are more moments that someone says to me they didn't know who Henry was than there are Gregory. But I actually, you know, I've actually had some students not knowing who Gregory Hines was. And that me to too. Me is just, it breaks my heart, and it's absolutely just the most not okay for so many reasons, including like Google. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we didn't have access to that when we were kids to be able to like look at look things up and to have that like read. And if we weren't being taught that by our parents or our dance, you know, our choreographers or our dance teachers, you know, we didn't know. But like now it's like, I think it's on a little bit more on like the students too, to know we're standing on the shoulders of so many, and like to not know who those legends are is like not okay.
To your point, when I start my semester, I'll ask the tappers to name a tap show, mm-hmm. and none of those shows come up. It's always 42nd Street.
Or Anything Goes. Or
shows that might have tap in them that I don't consider tap shows, but there is tap in it. They can never, Black and Blue or any of these shows, they don't know. And I don't know how to rectify that, but I'm doing my best to bring it in at least.
Well, that's what it takes. I mean, we're dance educators and there's thousands and thousands of us. It's our responsibility to help introduce and teach these kids things they need to know. I agree with you, Shay. The internet's widely there, and it wasn't there when we were younger. It's a tool, but we have to spark. It's so hard to spark the eagerness of them to look further past mm-hmm. what we teach them in that classroom. I mean, it's systemic. I, Michelle, I do think it's a you know, it has a systemic racism thing to it, you know, and I haven't researched this, but I'm just speaking from looking at it. Like, so many dance studios and higher ed universities and all those places, and I'm not back to calling they're all doing this, but everyone is preaching diversity in dance. But I would love to know what people are doing more than saying, let's hire a person of color to teach here, which is great. Mm-hmm. But let's look at the curriculum, especially at higher ed, of what, I mean, I would be shocked that most places are just like, okay, you have the curriculum. Michelle, you have a more specific curriculum that I do in regards to the steps that need to be taught at each level. Right. But it's really open to me and many professors. Like, we're going to teach what we think this level is, but they should take more time to see, am I teaching diverse shows? Is when I teach musical theater dance, I make sure I try my hardest for what I can do at giving as much diversity as possible. Can I get better at it? 1,000%. But it would be, people should look into that. Like, what are people teaching at tap classes? Are they touching Letang? Are they even mentioning all those shows you mentioned? Because I would argue a lot of places are not. And we always preach on the show, Michelle, I know you and I are good at this, like, for dance studios to pause. I mean, like, Dolly Dinkle community dance studios to pause and take time and work history into their lessons. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to give it more meaning. And I do think it's our responsibility, because if we don't talk about these shows, we don't talk about individuals like Letang, then the next generation of dancers are definitely not either. And we have to carry that in order for dance to evolve forward. I think it was Nan Giordano, and a lot of us said it, like, we got to know our history before we can responsibly go forward. Mm-hmm. And Shay, you taking the time and creative works, and you could be doing a lot with what you're talented at and the time and the connections you have, and to hear that that is a goal of yours is awesome and it's inspiring. So I can't wait to see, and I don't know how I can help, but I'm happy to help. Even if it's just shouting the words to go see it, I'm happy to support it. However, hey, I'm just thinking of this right now off the top of my head. Okay. Former podcast guest and friend, Jermaine Goodson. Sorry, she was... Oh. Yeah,
yeah,
Black Lives Matter. She better be involved. Yeah. Not the-
she, you know, So the thing about Jermaine Goodson is I have known her since I started teaching at Broadway Dance Center in like 2000. I cannot say enough about her and her, the way she has, I love her as a member of the TAP community, and she's just embraced me. We've embraced each other, and also that shared connection we have with Henry. So I teach on Fridays at Steps. I teach a theater jazz class every Friday at 1:15 at Steps, and Jermaine is there for a class, and she comes and peeks in every single class, and she just stands in the door and gives me, you know, even just a heart pat or just like a love, and it's so great. We had coffee the other day recently and got to talk a lot more about Henry and Ellie, and she just knows, because these were, like, I was just coming into his life, and she had been a part of it because of Black and Blue, so it's just awesome. She's amazing. I cannot say enough wonderful things about Jermaine.
We had such a lovely conversation with her, and we really love talking a little bit of history with her. To me, it's, and Joe as well, it's so important. I teach a lot of tap, and I do feel like we're losing it. Most of my students don't have a clue who Savion is, and he's the youngest that's left of this crew.
Right.
But speaking of the podcast, you tend to have a lot of friends that have been on this podcast, such as a Tommy Scrivens.
I have known Tommy a very long time. I absolutely adore him. I never forget the first time I saw Tommy dance. I was like totally just completely blown away. And we worked together for many years, and I'm so proud of him now as he's continuing legacy on in teaching and the work he's doing with the Bob Fosse legacy and just his own stuff too. So yeah, I'm very proud of him.
All right. So tell us about what's next for you. We know about Henry and Me, but sure. I know there's other things in there.
Yeah. So I have somehow, I'm going to knock on something. During the pandemic, I was developing a couple shows, and I'm now into the phase where both shows Henry and Me is having development, but two of the other shows I'm doing, we're having world premieres in the next year, which is exciting. I'm doing a project about Sophie Tucker. So I'm directing and choreographing a show about Sophie Tucker. And so Sophie Tucker was, another way to bring Henry back in, but Sophie Tucker was an early 1900s star of vaudeville. she was sort of the, she was before there was Mae West, there was Sophie. Before there was Bette Midler, there was Sophie. So basically Bette Midler's child is named Sophie. They were all inspired by Sophie Tucker, Jane Mansfield, you know. So think about who we have now to look at as the way that Sophie was in the early 1900s is like someone like Lizzo, someone who is herself. She's, you know, Sophie Tucker was a large woman, you know, maybe like a size 10 at the time, which like is like ridiculous, but she was a Jewish woman in vaudeville. She was large. She was bombastic. She was very body. She was different than all of the ingenues that were, you know, the opera singers and everybody else on vaudeville. And Sophie Tucker arrived on the scene and like kicked the door open, kicked the ceiling open. It was like, I'm here. This is what's going to happen. Right. And she was, so that she inspired so many fantastic women to then be able to sort of be themselves over the years and create their persona. This project that I'm doing about Sophie Tucker is exciting for many ways. One, in that Henry, his first job when he was 15, was on the road with Sophie Tucker. So it's just like a crazy, wow, like full circle moment of like insanity that now I'm working on this project. But so it's a musical, and it's going to have a world premiere next summer. And so that's something I'm working on right now. And it's also has the character Bojangles is in it. So it's exciting to sort of revisit. I did work on the movie Bojangles with Gregory and Henry. So it's very exciting to bring back sort of my love for Bojangles and to bring his name back forth. It's really important to me to continue to bring these names back forth. So we've got Sophie, we've got Bill Robinson. There's a woman in the show. Her name is Molly Elkins, which was a very famous Black vaudeville performer who wasn't able to transition to mainstream vaudeville Broadway like Bill Robinson was. And so she became she became a mentor. She became a manager. She was Sophie Tucker's best friend, her biggest influence. And so it's a story bringing back the three of their names and also like Florence Ziegfeld and all the like world mm-hmm. surrounding that early vaudeville day. So I'm doing that, which I'm very excited about. And then I am having another world premiere of a show that I'm directing and choreographing called Yes, the Musical. And Yes, the Musical is set in the world of Say Yes to the Dress, which is the television show.
That's fun.
It's really fun. So I'm actually doing a workshop of that in the city in October. And then we're doing our world premiere in Nashville in the spring. So yeah, those are two of the projects I've been working on. So
what do you do with those projects happening? What do you do what's your recharge? How do you recharge? How do you like reground yourself? Do you have a thing you do outside of dance?
So for a while it was like I was on this kick where I was doing this fitness journey and I was calling myself the fitness rampage queen, which is just like absolutely ridiculous.
Self-proclaimed,
And I was just like, I was like rampaging around the city doing all of these like fitness things. That's something I really, in fact, I'm staring at her right now. She's eating her paw. I enjoy spending time with my partner. Well, my partner's not eating her paw.
I was like,
the dog is eating her paw. My partner's, I smell something. So I think she's making dinner, but spending time with my family, my partner and our dog. Just sort of seeing shows. I see as many shows as I can. I love to support, obviously, our community. I really love my classes at Steps on Fridays. It's just like one class a week, but I've been teaching since 2000, and I used to teach like 5 days a week, and now I'm just doing the one class a week. And I really love being able to get in the room with my associates and, you know, mess around and have fun. And yeah.
I mean, I think that's just a nice mix. It is nice to teach, and then you have choreography here, and I always felt the times I felt overwhelmed, I don't want to say necessarily burnt out, was when I was doing a lot of the same thing. I was teaching mm-hmm. a ton, or I was just choreographing a ton. To me, that was overwhelming. So I think it's nice that you found a good mix. My fitness question is, were you doing it to find an escape, or were you doing it just because you just went on a craze of like all things fitness?
Yeah. So for years ago, or I guess it was right before the pandemic, I found myself at the heaviest I had ever been, which I'm creeping back up to that now. Thank you very much. It's an ebb and flow. But I just, for me, I was like, I had a little break in my schedule. My partner was just going into, she was in Oklahoma on Broadway. And so she was just going into like rehearsals for that. And so I sort of was like, I found myself with this like a month where I was like, okay, just, I did ClassPass. I don't know. I mean, if you all know what ClassPass is, I did ClassPass. Yep. And I was like, I'm just going to like lean into this. And then I called it a rampage once. And then somebody was like, oh, you're like a queen. And then I just made fitness rampage queen. I actually just saw one of the gyms that I go to a lot just sent me a screenshot of a photo shoot I did from them. And I look crazy. I have these two kettlebells and I put this look on my face like, I'm doing this. And I'm like, oh gosh. But it just was sort of, and then during the pandemic, it really, I mean, I was out, I mean, almost every day in the pandemic being in this, trapped in this apartment, I would just get out and go to the park. And I was like doing, I was running and doing burpees. And like, so I was just trying to lean into the like fitness part of it. So yeah. I'm going to try to dial back into that a little bit more because I do miss that part of me. So.
Well, I want to ask.
Yes.
Your thoughts on dance competition tap.
Well, so I don't know if I have enough to go off now on that because I was for many years, I was like judging and teaching. I'm not sure I'm well-versed in talking about that now because I haven't been around. I used to think that, I don't know. Now I'm pausing because I don't know. I mean, I don't think I know enough about it right now.
Well, Michelle,
back in the day. Yeah. What do you mean by like,
yeah, what's changed for you, Michelle? I mean, you've been involved for a while as well. So like, how's it evolved for you?
Well, teachers think they're teaching rhythm tap and some do to a degree. They're not giving them foundation. Mm-hmm. They're working on flash and speed. And I feel like we've lost what the foundation of tap is. And then you can build on that. Because when I have them in a convention class, they are struggling with time steps.
Okay. So let me go more about, if I can talk more about just like in teaching tap. Because okay. At like Broadway Dance Center, when I was, I haven't taught tap for like a little bit of a minute, but for a while right before the pandemic, I was teaching on the weekly. I did it for many years and then I had to break up with teaching for a while. I literally had a breakup. I was like, I can't, because I was feeling that way. I was like having these students come in, they were not interested at all in the foundation. They just wanted to do the flash. They just wanted, it was hurting my feelings, you know, yes. And I was trying my very best to continue to like say, but I had to like, so I broke up with teaching for a while. And then about a year before the pandemic, I was teaching, I was doing my, like what I'm doing now, steps and doing the weekly like theater class. I was doing like a weekly tap class and I was starting to re-engage in it because I was noticing the students were more interested in actually working on the foundation. So I was excited about that. But that was like my New York students. It was times when I was getting students in from dance studios across the country and I can remember a certain class and I said to, you know, a group, like, how long have you all been taking tap? And they were like 14 years. And I was like, 14 days or 14 years? Because like, actually, what am I it's actually like,
get your money
at?
Back, get your money back. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Like,
I'm kidding.
Actually, what am I looking at? But I was like, also wanting to be like, okay, like, I'm not trying to like, listen, I had a great foundation and then I stumbled at 12 into the greatest tap dancer teacher of and choreographer of the entire land. So like I get like maybe that, you know, but I was like, but wait, like what are we learning? So I haven't seen it as much of the like convention circuit because I haven't been out there, but I do remember being a little bit like blown away with skipping actual technique. Weight changes, I mean, I don't even know, like not even a thing. Like what's weight change? Like, I'm like, this is like the foundation of it all. I mean, like if you want weight change, like let's talk to Jermaine Salzberg and Jermaine Goodson. And you know, I'm like, let's, yeah. So yes.
Okay.
Preach. All right. Yeah. It's
sorry.
Tough.
We're saying the same thing. I just haven't seen it as much on the, like, yeah.
Yeah. There's just, I mean, even weight change. So, you know, jazz is my specialty teaching and it's the same thing. I go, guys, it's just, half of dance is just knowing where your weight is, you know? And
yeah,
it is interesting. And to me, once you really find the foundation in yourself, dance just feels better, because mm-hmm. connecting a bunch of either tricks or speed, like you said, Michelle, is, to me, it doesn't feel as good when you dance. Like, it's all those in-between things. It's all the transitions, which is the weight sharing. And I think that's so important. And I just think it is missing a little bit. I mean, it's so funny, Shay, you asked the question, how long have some of you been tapping? I'll be teaching a jazz class and I'll ask them, raise your hand if you've trained in jazz dance for more than 10 years, and their hands go up, and I say, what is jazz dance? And then they're like, you're in college? And this isn't any students that are listening to this, but I'm being broad with my conversations with high school students and collegiate and pre-professional students. I go, how would you describe jazz dance? And it's like, they've never thought about that before. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you've been training in a style. And obviously you can say the same thing for tap dance or any styles, but it's like, have someone actually sat and thought about, you've been training with it for so long, have you actually tried to describe what it is? Because then it'll give it a little bit more meaning when you're doing it. And mm-hmm. some of that connection gets lost too. I think, to Michelle, to your point, is at least in the convention competition circuit, it's so about teaching to win that placement mm-hmm. and not teaching for the history, like we already talked about here, the love and the real evolution of this art form. And I do think that is starting to go away. I'll segue that into my one. I have like two questions left, Michelle. I know we're getting tight on time. I'll at least get this one in.
Yep.
Who, Shay, is inspiring you as either like this generation or the next generation of either a dancer, young choreographer, you know, upcoming teacher, someone you're working with, either Steps of Broadway Dance Center, who's someone that you're like, they're doing a great job at this and I'm excited to see what they're going to do next? Is there anybody? That's kind of a hard question.
It's a hard question because there's no, that's great because there are many. And I love seeing, because I started teaching so young. I'm turning 48 next week, go me. But I started teaching at 20, you know, and I just like so cool to see. I often think about like what would I be like now at 20? You know what I mean? Like if I was just starting out now, and I'm seeing so many fantastic young artists, explore themselves and start to involve. I would have to say right now, to be honest, the most fresh thing on my mind is that I met, and I could say her name here. I met a young dancer this summer named Finley Ashfield. And Finley took my class at Broadway Dance Center. Steps, one of the places I teach. And she was 12, and she fit right in. It's an adult class. It's like all adult. I'd be like, it's like, you know, she fit right in. She dove in. She was literally like, I saw myself at that age. And then all of a sudden now I was like seeing a 12-year-old version of myself come back. And that at 48 was sort of like a dream, like a very interesting. And then I had the awesome opportunity last week to dance with her in a space where I was starting to put some of the Henry and Me movement on her. And so I was being channeling Henry and working with Finley and watching that legacy being passed. And I think I just was really excited, again, re-energized about the future of our community and the future of dance. And she was such a little sponge and was such a hard worker that I just really was. So I think that for me was the most exciting thing I've seen in a while. I saw it was like the most excited I felt in a while, and the most excited something that I've seen our younger generation, because she was really like a little sponge and like ready to go. So it was a long-winded answer to that, but she was awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing what a 12-year-old and even younger can do, and they don't even know like that.
Right,
exactly. Now that story you've told on this podcast, and I'm sure you've told it many of times, and how that made you feel and energized you and filled up your cup in probably so many ways. Like you said, she was just being a sponge.
She was just being a sponge. She was just being her, and she was awesome. So
yeah.
All right, Joe, you have time.
Oh, I do. Yes. Okay, great. Yeah. To my list of questions. Oh, I got to pick one. Okay, this is going to go to the next generation because I just love that. All right, so advice. So say there's a rising young choreographer, and it makes me think of her friend Emily Bufford. She does their Young Choreographers Festival. Someone that wants to kind of do similar work that you did, like have wants to work putting new musicals, shows, Broadway, off-Broadway, you know, that musical theater commercial style. What if someone wants to get into that or they're starting to do it, do you have a couple sentences of advice? And you can't use the one you already said, which was trust yourself. Or you can use it, but can you maybe expand on that a little bit? Or what are some pieces of advice to give that young choreographer?
I think, you know, it's this business of show that we're in is not for the faint of hearts, right? It's tough. And yes, there is the trust yourself. There's also the making the connections. There's finding mentors. There's finding people that you can grow with. You know, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I had these wonderful mentors. I still am looking at mentor. I still have still looking at someone like Susan Stroman, who I want to, you know, emulate and be like. It's like looking and finding those, you know, those artists. And I think just putting your time in. I mean, the thing about both Henry and Gregory used to tell me, be patient. Don't rush. You got to be ready. So you do your work. You do it. You stay steadfast. You do your work. And you cultivate a community for yourself and get those people around you that are going to lift you up and move with you. And always remember, it's not just about you. It's about your community. So,
yeah, Michelle, I think Al Blackstone gave, I didn't ask that question. Well, I probably did to him. And he said, he gets a lot of people that are like, can you give me advice? Or I have this idea of this piece I want to do. And he's like, how much have you choreographed? And they're like, this is kind of my first thing. And he's like, all due respect, I want to help you put in the work. Like, you're going to answer a lot of your own questions if you put the time. There's no fast track. It's just, there's just a long, ongoing process. They're like, this is art, people. Yeah.
I mean, I spent years getting to the point where I'm at right now. I've been choreographing and teaching since 1997. I have done it all. And we laugh about, like, I've done sock puppet choreography, but I have. I literally have done, I've been in every room. I will continue to be in all the rooms. But you want to be able to get to the point where you can open a door and walk through it and keep walking. So you got to be able to make sure that you're ready. And don't try to be unready. You got to be ready. Because, you know, this business is tough. And there's a lot of people trying to do it.
Oh, yeah. Such good info. Joe, I know you wrote it down for the t-shirt that has all our...
I mean, the world, you know, be inspired by somebody like, listener, be inspired by somebody like Shay Sullivan. But Shay's already taken, you know, be yourself. Like, people, I think there's so much of that copying thing and, you know, a little bit. And it's like, nope, go be you. The dance world doesn't have you yet. Like, just go be you in this dance world. And there's a whole journey of figuring that out. The three of us are still figuring that out, you know, and we're trying to be the best versions of we that we can. All right. This is my favorite segment because I get to sit back and enjoy it.
We just need
one of those like rapid fire questions, like one of those like things. But we don't because that's not the budget we have here. Anyway, moving on. Tolson, take her away.
Buzz button. That was easy. That's it. That's all we've got, the staple button. Here we go, Shay.
All right. Oh, crap.
Question number one. What is your favorite comfort food?
Wait, I have to say it fast.
No, you don't have to say
it. Well, yeah, rapid fire. Of course it's fast. What are you going to look at a menu? Like what?
Salad.
Oh.
Boo.
No. Okay. I'm gonna do it again.
Okay. No. We'll cut that. Okay, Shay.
Cut that. Do it again. Because I have a good one.
Okay. Go. Not cutting it.
Favorite comfort food.
Crab legs.
Okay. Yes.
I didn't think of that as comfort food, but okay, I'll take it. Who is or was your favorite Miss America?
Mallory Hagan.
Okay. What show do you want to choreograph?
Well, here's the thing. I've choreographed all the ones I'd like to do. So how about Some Like It Hot?
Mm.
Oh, okay. Yeah, great. Song you rock out to?
I can buy myself flowers.
Yes. That's like my daughter's favorite song. Mm-hmm.
Last question. Who made you starstruck?
Rosie O'Donnell.
Nice.
Interesting.
I mean, it's tell energy. Yeah, tell us.
Tell us the story.
Really honestly, well, Hugh Jackman as well. Both of them, both Rosie O'Donnell and Hugh Jackman, I met in an elevator, and I was sort of like, oh, like at Ripley Greer, just like, oh, so yeah. Random. But they both made me starstruck. Now, if I met Adele or Meryl Streep, I think I would actually lose it. I'd be in this, you just can run over me in the middle of the street. But
wait, have you seen that prank? This is a psycho. Did you get through your questions, Michelle? Sorry, was that five? Okay, sorry.
I didn't do so good, but I know
you're good. Wait, there's this video, you've got to watch it. It's Adele, where it's all these Adele what's it called?
Oh, look-alike.
So good. Yeah, so good. Oh, wait, my God, that's so good. I would have lost my mind. Yes.
And Adele dresses right. up, they yeah. give her the prosthetic, they yes. pretend it's not her, and then they all realize it's her. Oh, it's the funniest yes. video.
It's so crying. Good. It's so good. It's so good.
Starstruck moment for you.
Okay, I gotta get better at answering these questions.
You should do
it. Michelle Tolson. I did a movie with Jane Seymour that was pretty cool. I think she was just so interesting and so normal. Like, you know, I don't know. That was just fun hanging out with her, to be honest. I never met a lot of celebrities. I'm not really a starstruck person. Sorry.
All right, but if you ran into who,
okay. you'd be like, oh, that's a good question. Right. That's a good answer. To be honest, it's like big choreographers. It's like, or it's big people okay. in our industry. Most of them are dead. It's not sad. It's not a bad thing. They're just not around anymore. Like the people we talked about on this, you know, like a Gus Giordano or like,
Bob Fosse or.
Yeah, you know. I think the people that like I teach about now. Okay. Yeah. Most of them are dead. Hate to say it. They are.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why we have to keep it alive, y'all. We can't end on that note. Jeez.
No, you have to ask me.
Oh, yeah, Michelle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You ask Michelle. You can, yeah, take a question.
Bernadette Peters.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Okay. I was probably now like I'm thinking 12 of people.
I was like 12 or 13, and I was in New York City competing at a competition called Talent America. And my dance teacher had taught, he was old school, and he had taught us all about her. And we were walking down the street to the hotel, and she was coming out of her show. And I was like, and so Bernadette Peters. But the person that would make me starstruck because, well, one's dead, Whitney.
See, you're allowed to have certain ones. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Vanessa Williams, because she was the first black.
I mean, like, yeah. So, I mean, like Michael Jackson, same thing. I mean, even with all the controversy. But, okay, so you made me think of something, though. So this is going to sound silly at first, but go with me on the journey. Mine would probably be any of the four leads of Will and Grace. And because it was, I know they're not the biggest stars ever, but it was being growing up gay and coming out. It was like the first kind of show where there was two gay leads. And it talked about, even though it talked about all the things, it talked about a lot, and it was influential and brought me humor. So I think any of those four would be pretty starstruck.
And, you know, that's probably why I led with Rosie, because I came out when I was just 20, and it was I came out pre Rosie Ellen coming out.
Gotcha. Okay,
yeah. And so then to see someone like be so successful, like Rosie O'Donnell as a lesbian, was something that I really was able to, It just made me feel comforted that I was going to be okay.
I think that's important. I almost met Sean Hayes. He was in Promises, and a friend of a friend was in the show in the ensemble, and we went on stage afterwards, and we did meet Kristen Chenoweth, came out and met her briefly, and Sean Hayes was like walking upstage from us. We were downstage having conversation, and I didn't want to be rude to Kristen Chenoweth. Hello, she's like holding her little dog. And Sean Hayes crosses from stage right to stage left upstage. And I was like, part of me, and I'm not that like run over and be like, oh my God. So I didn't, of course, I had to keep my cool. But that was the closest of that kind of encounter.
You need to come to the city. They're both
on Broadway. What's the other one's name?
Good Night Oscar.
Eric. Oh. Yeah. Well, Good Night Oscar. I saw that.
He was,
McCormick is in The Cottage. Yeah.
The Cottage. Yeah. Which I just saw. Yeah.
Did you? Good.
Yeah. And they visit each other after the show.
Aren't they just a few blocks? Aren't those theaters just a few blocks away, I think? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Broadway.
I know. It's Broadway. Okay.
It's Broadway. Che, thank you so much for making time for us with your busy schedule.
Thank you for having me. You all are a delight. And yeah, thank you.
That was
Sam Fan. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening and liking Joe and I. I know we are an acquired taste, but we're quite tasty.
We're like crab legs. So good crab legs, right, Shay? We're like some good crab legs.
Oh my God. I'm having crab legs for my birthday next week. I'm so excited.
I love that. If you would like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Facebook, Jam Dance Podcast on Facebook. Actually, that's wrong. It's Joe and Michelle's podcast. That's what we are on Facebook. We are Jam_Dance_Podcast on Instagram. We are Jam Dance Podcast on the Twitter. You can email us and tell us how much you enjoyed this conversation with Shay at jamdancepodcast@gmail.com. And Jam Fam, thank you so much for listening. Joe, thanks for hanging out with us for another great show.
I'm just a cute sidekick. Ha ha ha. Shay, that was such a pleasure. Thank you for joining us today. It was a blast.
Thank you both. Have a great night.
See you soon, Jam Fam.
Bye, guys.